Welcome to the Therapeutic Food Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Maryn Mitchell. I'm an integrative nutrition health coach, therapeutic diet expert, and founder of The Road to Living Whole. There are many different diets out there. It's hard to know which one is right for you with your chronic illness and autoimmune disease. In this podcast, I'm going to share with you the foundational pieces every single therapeutic diet out there shares, and also how to use the best one for your particular diagnosis. If you've been looking for a meal planning partner, help navigating the complicated healthcare system, and want to feel better quickly, I'm your girl. Grab your kombucha and notebook. Let's dive in. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I am so excited to introduce you to Dr. Emily Rowe, and we are going to talk about Lyme disease and other stealth infections. Dr. Rowe has her own personal story with Lyme disease. She was also a doctor who didn't get the training that she needed, and she's kind of gone down this whole route, and I am so excited to dive in and to help you navigate these stealth infections that can really be detrimental to life and very difficult to get a diagnosis of and proper treatment of. So Dr. Rowe, please introduce yourself and share your story.
Okay. First of all, please call me Emily. I actually don't like being called doctor because I think it generates a hierarchy that's not always helpful for healing. Like you, I like to form partnerships with people. And I find like a lot of patients have their own they know what's wrong with them intrinsically, like at a very deep level and know what they need to do. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got into this field because I was sick and I couldn't find a doctor to help me. And I learned about Lyme disease in medical school. I graduated in 2004 from the University of Miami. We were taught basically that you get Lyme disease by having a tick bite in a Lyme endemic area and you get a bullseye rash. You take doxycycline for 10 days and that's it. It turns out it's way more complicated than that. I studied internal medicine, just to give you my brief background. I was doing a residency in New York City after I graduated from medical school in internal medicine. I was super frustrated with the system. I was prescribing a lot of meds that I wouldn't take myself personally because of side effects. One day I was working in the ICU overnight and we had 7 patients die. And that morning I went downstairs and signed 7 death certificates. And there were all these like complicated family dynamics in the ICU. And I felt like I wasn't helping people. And I was like, I did not go to medical school to do this. So I actually quit my residency and I went back to school for acupuncture because at the same time, while all this stuff was going on with my residency, I was super sick with autoimmune disease. I had Crohn's. And I was 29 years old and I was looking at a colostomy bag and I started going to acupuncture out of desperation because the main medications they offered me had a lot of side effects. And I had previously caught tuberculosis from a patient. I was talking to the gastrointestinal doctor and I was like, look, I don't want to take this medication because it could possibly make my tuberculosis reactivate. And he said, oh, it's not a big deal. If it reactivates, we can just put you in an isolation chamber in the hospital. And he's like, and I'll round on you every day. And I'm like, well, that's kind of a big deal to me, right? So I was looking at these horrific medications and I didn't want to take them and I didn't want to get a colostomy bag. And I started going for acupuncture and it really helped modulate my autoimmune disease. A big part of what was driving my autoimmune disease was actually having chronic Lyme. Lyme is a bacteria, and it's called Borrelia burgdorferi. That's what true Lyme disease. Now, there's a lot of other co-infections that we lump together with Lyme, things like Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichia, Rickettsia. But true Lyme is Borrelia burgdorferi. What Lyme is a bacteria that can live inside your cells. And when you have an intracellular pathogen, your immune system will start attacking itself, attacking your own cells. And this is a normal process if you have something inside there that's not supposed to be there. We know that a lot of different chronic infections can drive autoimmune disease. For example, mycoplasma pneumonia is also an intracellular bacteria that can drive chronic infections. And there's a lot of viral stuff as well. One of the problems with Lyme is it's the ultimate stealth pathogen because it can shapeshift. And if you think of it, it can live inside A deer, it can live inside a tick, it can live inside a human, it can live in a dog, it can live in a raccoon. So, I mean, you've got to deeply respect something that can sense its environment, change its genetic stuff, and shift. And then, even within humans, it has four major forms. It has a cystic form, it has a form in biofilms, it has an intracellular form. And so when you treat it, you have to treat all these different forms simultaneously. Otherwise, you're just start generating the shape-shifting ability. So it's like very interesting, like just the biology of this.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
I'm just thinking, like, I know about Lyme, but you are telling me so much more than I already don't know. Like, I'm learning already.
Okay,
And so my
great.
wheels are turning. And so we know that autoimmune disease is more of a symptom than a cause, right? It's not a root cause. There's something causing it. And, stealth infections are, I think, like the next layer, like when you start kind of diving in, but it's like you have no idea where to start. And I've actually never, out of all the people that I follow and all the stuff that I've read, I actually didn't know that there were four different ways that it can be in the body and you have to attack both of those. And I'm thinking, okay, there's cysts, there's the intracellular, it was attacking you, basically your body was attacking your intestine, your large intestine. And I'm just like, my mind is blown. And hopefully we can kind of get into more of potential treatments and things like that at towards the end of the podcast. But like my mind is literally blown. Like I'm thinking about all these problems that people struggle with, and it's like it could just be one virus that's morphing to the environment, which is crazy to think about.
Right. And I mean, you have to respect these things. I mean, look at COVID. COVID brought the whole world to a halt. And it's like people and scientists debate if viruses are even alive, which is also fascinating to think about. But I think what's missing often is a deep respect for these pathogens. And I mean, I bow down to Lyme as one of my greatest spiritual teachers, honestly, because like just intellectually, it's fascinating. Biologically, what's going on, but also like energetically, what's going on. So, often I see people with, chronic Lyme and they have a lot of like self-sabotaging behavior. And there's actually biological dynamics behind parasitic behavior. So, for example, you might have heard of toxoplasmosis, which is a disease that's associated with cats. It can be transmitted to humans. But what's interesting is normally rats and mice will avoid the smell of cat urine. They're deterred by it because if they smell cat urine, they're like, oh, there's a cat around. I don't want to get eaten. But if a rat gets infected with toxoplasmosis, its behavior actually changes and it gets attracted to cat urine because this change in the behavior in the rat allows the toxoplasmosis to complete the next step of its life cycle. So there's actually biological mechanisms where it changes the neurology of the brain so that the toxoplasmosis can complete the next step of its life cycle. And so I and there's like this is documented in scientific literature. You can Google toxoplasmosis, and there's even change in people's behavior associated with toxoplasmosis. Like there's more aggression and stuff like that, which is fascinating to think about. But I often think that part of what goes on with chronic illness is there's some self-sabotaging behavior. And I think part of it is actually biological mechanisms behind parasites. And the parasites, they actually don't want to kill you because they want to keep living themselves, but they'll make you sick and steal your vital force. And this is like fascinating energetics. And in Chinese medicine, and I'm also a Chinese medicine practitioner, I have a master's degree in acupuncture and Chinese herbs. They call this a Gu syndrome. It's this a way of a stealing life force that can leave you chronically depleted, and people will come in and they have trouble sticking to treatment plans, which is often why they need a health coach to help with handholding and stuff like that. But I think just knowing that there's a biological mechanism behind the parasitic behavior is really important in terms of overcoming it.
Well, and I think it's validating to be like, okay, I've had a really hard time sticking with this and I don't know why. I want to, and I feel like I just can't. I hear that a lot, especially in the early stages of making changes and the medications kicking in and things like that, because there's die-off and, and they're literally like, I feel like I'm going crazy. And I'm like, well, that's normal and it's okay. And I think that like they're so used to being, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Just you need an antidepressant, right? They're just used to being dismissed and used to being told that they're crazy, that it's validating to know that there's a mechanism behind it. It is treatable, but it's like you're not crazy. Like this is how it is, and we can help you work through it. I think that that's just really validating.
Yeah. So I went back to school for Chinese medicine just to get back on my tangent. Sorry. And then I was, for a long time I just did Chinese medicine, and I was actually treating a lot of patients where I look back and I suspect they had chronic Lyme, but I didn't know about Lyme back then. But I actually learned about chronic Lyme several years later. I graduated from acupuncture school in 2009. And my health was kind of maintained with the autoimmune stuff, but it was still constantly there. And I tried various things and always kind of struggled. And then my husband and I, we were at a yoga retreat at Kripalu, and my husband picked up this book called Why Can't I Get Better? And it's by Richard Horowitz. And Kripalu is up in Western Massachusetts, which is kind of like the heart of Lyme country. The whole book is about chronic Lyme, and it's a fantastic book. My husband's like, oh, you need to read this. And so he and I started reading it, and they have like a quiz at the beginning of the book that's called the MSIDS. And I use this quiz every day in my work, and I'll send you a copy if you want to put a PDF on your website.
Yes, please.
And it's called the Multiple Systemic Infectious Disease Syndrome, like questionnaire. And so basically, what they consider is, Lyme is an infectious disease and it's systemic, but you can have Lyme, which is Borrelia, you can have Babesia, Bartonella, and then like chronic cytomegalovirus or chronic Epstein-Barr. And next thing you know, you got a petting zoo, right? And so this is where the whole concept of multiple systemic infectious disease syndrome comes in. So we reached out to Dr. Horowitz because I took this quiz, and I think if you score higher than a 46, there's like an 85% chance that you have Lyme. And like this is a clinically validated questionnaire. So they did like had people take the questionnaire and then they test their blood for Lyme and like to see if they have it. And I think I scored like 126. And so like 46, yeah. So I was like, oh, But
Whoa.
the main things that the quiz looks at, I mean, it's a list of symptoms, but the main symptoms are fatigue, migratory joint pain, neurocognitive disorders, including sleep, and like migratory nerve pain. And all your symptoms get worse, often associated with the menstrual cycle if you're female, because Lyme loves the menstrual cycle. It just feeds off those little hormones. It like has a party. So I kind of like coped with chronic Lyme for years. And then in 2017, I developed a stage 4 metastatic cancer. And I was staying at home because I was sick, and we had a mold infested home. And between the cancer treatment and the mold toxicity, my immune system got depressed to the point where the Lyme had a party. And so, next thing you know, like there was just like this whole health crisis between the combination of the, the chronic inflammatory autoimmune disease, cancer, having surgery, for cancer, and then treatment for it. And then I was sick, so I was staying home all the time in a mold toxic home. So I had this perfect storm of just literally a cluster of triggers going on that caused problems. So I learned about this through personal experience. And we reached out to Richard Horowitz and asked him to treat me. And he's like, no, I won't treat you. I stopped treating patients. I'm not taking new patients, but I'll do something better. I'll train you. So we were one of 40 doctors who got personally trained by him. And now he runs regular groups, I think about twice a year, where he actually trains practitioners. And he is incredibly generous with his knowledge. He's an interesting guy. He's got this a deep Buddhist meditation practice. Now, he has a very heavy hand with antibiotics, and I don't always agree with everything he does. He's extremely conventional. I combine a lot more herbs and supplements and outside things, like I refer patients for blood ozone and vitamin IVs, and he doesn't really do any of that stuff, but he does understand the psychological impact of the disease, and he's really generous with his knowledge, which a lot of people are not. So I respect him as a mentor, and he taught me a lot. And anybody who even thinks they might have Lyme should read his book.
Awesome. That's really helpful. I know that experts in Lyme are rare. They're hard to come by, they're hard to get into. And then it's really a long game when it comes to healing. I feel like when you told me that you got cancer and you were in a mold home, like, and I was like, my heart just broke for you. I'm so glad that you're still here and you're on the other side. Looks like you're doing better than ever. And I'm so grateful that you were able to get that training because, yeah, most people are not generous with their knowledge. And then it just kind of like dies with them. You know,
Right.
they might write a book that's very superficial and then it's gone. And what I also love is how you talk about the different approaches and you prefer a more integrative approach, which I would expect from an acupuncturist. I also think that, you know, it's interesting because there's usually a blend and antibiotic use has its place, but it's often overused and it is very aggressive and can cause other health issues as well. And so I love some of the treatments that you talked about, ozone therapy and vitamin therapy and things like that, that are my experience with ozone was it was very effective very quickly. It got rid. I actually, my first experience with an ozone IV was during COVID. I got it finally, and it wiped me out. I thought I had sinus infection for a week and antibiotics did nothing. So then I was like, oh, take a COVID test. Sure enough, I got ozone. I got like, you know, the nutrition IV with like 30 grams of vitamin C and then other stuff, I got glutathione push and then, you know, all the other integrative stuff. And I recovered very quickly and I have my smell and my taste.
Thank
I did,
God. And your brain.
and my
Clearly,
brain.
you're mentally clear.
I did lose half of my hair, but it all grew back. You know, but it's like I always find with the stealth infections that it really does take an integrative approach that you know, and there's no one magic bullet or one magic pill that's really going to work without, you know, obviously giving away treatment protocol. What are, I guess, if somebody like is going to read this book, which I will link in the show notes and all of that. I guess it would be, what does it look like start to finish? To how do you find a practitioner? Like, what are, you know, can you go online? Are there search terms that pull up practitioners? Is there a website that maybe there's like a group of practitioners that are, you know, Lyme that have training that you can like find them? And then it's like, you know, what do they need to tell the practitioner? And, you know, like, let's kind of maybe walk people through what they could expect on the journey to recovery.
So the first step is like the clinical suspicion that you have Lyme and not a Prozac deficiency, right? You
Right.
know, because a lot of my patients have come in and they've been sick for years and they've got joint pain that comes and goes, and they're told that, you know, they're crazy and, oh, just take Abilify, which is an antipsychotic, right? And it's like, right. So the first is just learning about chronic Lyme. And an easy way to learn what the symptoms are is to look at the MSIDS questionnaire. And it seems like a lot to process, but if you go through a step by step, and it really takes like 15, 20 minutes to think about your last 2 weeks and what you've experienced, and go through the questionnaire. And it'll give you a snapshot if this is a possibility or not. Now, one thing I do have to say, there's an order of treatment. And I always find to have clinical success, if I suspect somebody has both mold and Lyme, you have to treat the mold toxicity first, which is complicated because you got to get out of the mold toxic home. And I have people who either refuse to do that, refuse to properly remediate, and it's like, I don't know how to help you.
Right.
And it's like it's a complicated thing to tell somebody. So mold first, but we're not going to talk about mold today.
Well, I do think it's good to address that, and I think this is something that people don't understand is you can't hit everything all at once. And there are some less educated practitioners out there who will try. And then we're dealing with ineffective treatment and feeling worse and all of that. So I've always, the people that I've worked with that specialize in chronic illness, there's always like, what do we address first? Sometimes it's literally like, we're not addressing anything until we get your diet good. Like, we have to get you off of the junk food. We have to get you eating healthy. We have to get that foundation. And then we're going to systematically go through. And when you're dealing with multiple pathogens, it's like untangling a like five necklaces that have gotten tangled, and you're slowly pulling them apart, and and then they get retangled and all of this stuff. And so people don't understand, like, there, you can't just punch everything in the face all at the same time. There, you have to layer it. And I think that people, they're so tired of feeling bad. They just really want to feel better. We come from a microwave society where, you take a pill for 7 to 10 days and you feel better.
Right. And that's a problem I have is people come in wanting a silver bullet who, and people who've been sick for 45 years. And I'm like, guess what? There's no silver bullet. And it's a complicated conversation to have. And often you have to have it over and over again with people. I mean, there's still days where I don't feel good, but I'm not dead. And I'm significantly better than I used to be. And I can still walk. Whereas at one point I had Guillain-Barré and couldn't walk. So, there's, it's complicated to explain this when you're really in a dark place, right? And you have this no sense of hope. And I have certain people who are, I can't even treat them for mold until they do limbic system retraining or something like that. The reason why you have to treat mold first is if you take antibiotics, let's just speculate, like, oh, I've got a urinary tract infection. I'm going to take these antibiotics. Well, what happens? You get a yeast infection, right? How many times does that happen? Or you take antibiotics for a sinus, you get a yeast infection.
Every
Guess
time.
what? The mold goes nuts. So you got to treat the mold before you do the antibiotics. And like that's just like basic biology, because when you start killing off all the bacteria, the mold grows. And so a lot of people who have had previous Lyme treatment and were not successful and are still feeling terrible, often the antibiotic regimens made the mold toxicity worse. So when you're colonized in the nasopharynx and GI tract with mold toxicity, throwing more antibiotics into your biological body system is just gonna cause more havoc, not help. So you always have to treat mold first, and there is an order of priority. So, if I suspect somebody is Lyme and mold, we look at the mold first. Now, some people don't. Some people are purely Lyme patients. So if I suspect somebody is Lyme, I'll talk to them about it. And sometimes they're like, oh, I was diagnosed when I was 15 and I had antibiotics and they told me I was fine and it's still banging around. Now, some people have never been diagnosed. The problem with conventional Lyme tests is if you do a test at Quest, which is, your basic ELISA Western blot, it misses 50% of cases of Lyme. And the reason why is part of why Lyme is an amazing stealth pathogen is it actually burrows into your lymph node and eats out your lymph node, and your ability to make antibodies gets impaired. And so, one of the things I learned from Richard Horowitz is when you suspect somebody has Lyme, one of the first things you need to do is do a full immune assessment. And you can look at this thing called IgG subclasses. And so IgG subclass 1 and 3 deficiency in particular is associated with chronic Lyme. And so IgG, these are immunoglobulins, and that's your immune system's ability to make antibodies. And so if your ability to make antibodies is impaired, then next thing you know, you can't fight the infections the way you should.
That's really helpful.
Yeah, so antibody testing sucks for Lyme. Okay, so that's the reason why. So I use a method that was developed in Europe called T cell reactivity testing. And I love T cell reactivity testing. There's a lab I love. They're in Minnesota. They're called Infecto Labs. And then there's another one in Germany called Armin Labs. And what they look at is instead of antibody response, they look at what's called T cell reactivity. And so this you can differentiate if an infection is active or past. So let's say you went to summer camp in the fifth grade, you got a tick bite and that was found right away. You got the bullseye rash, you took doxycycline, maybe it cleared it. And then you get tested 15, 30 years later and you have antibodies. Well, is that an old infection that you're showing the antibodies or is that current? And the T cell reactivity testing can differentiate if you actually have an active infection. Now, no insurance covers this testing. To run the full panel is about $2,000, so it's not cheap. But I'll skip the handbag and the fancy shoes and spend the money on my health,
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really do like to stress is when you go an integrative approach and you are getting to the root cause, it's a pyramid. You're paying, you're going to have to invest a lot up front, but as time goes on, it narrows. Where in the allopathic model, it's an upside down pyramid where the investment up front is little, but the longer you're sick, the more and more your expenses are. So, people really get sticker shock when it comes to tests and things like that. So I appreciate that you get let people know what to expect. I think that's really important. Also to know that it's going to be the one that's going to tell you exactly what's going on. And I think that that's really important too, because if people are like, I have to spend $2,000 on what? They want to know that they're actually going to get answers, the correct answers, right?
Right.
And I think that, people are being told they have Lyme and they might not. And it could be mold, it could be EB Epstein-Barr, it could be other stealth infections, but the antibodies, knowing that, okay, that's not reliable because it could be past infection that was resolved. The body was amazing and took care of it, or it could be active.
And that's one of the problems with like even antibody testing for Epstein-Barr. It's like, something like shingles where you get a physical manifestation of reactivation. You're saying, say, oh, you have a shingles outbreak. And that's very clear. But you can have reactivation of Epstein-Barr and your main symptoms are, brain fog because Epstein-Barr can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause brain inflammation. So you don't have like a physical lesion that you can see, and then you can run tests and your antibody levels are high. It's like, well, did you have Epstein-Barr or were you recently exposed to somebody that had it and your antibodies just went up? Or maybe you have Epstein-Barr and you have chronic Lyme, so you can't make the antibodies. So this is why I really like T cell reactivity testing. The other lab that's really good for diagnosing Lyme disease is called IGenix. They're out of California, and you've probably heard of them.
Yep.
But those are the two labs that I feel like are, and Armin. But Armin's complicated because you have to send labs off to Germany. But those are the three labs that I really use for diagnostics, for telling me what's actually going on. Because you get elevated antibodies for Epstein-Barr, it's like, well, is this active or not? I mean, if you have true IgMs, which are acute antibodies, sure. But if it's a reactivation, it could be old chronic stuff showing IgGs. So this is diagnostically complicated, and this is where it really takes a trained clinician to take your clinical symptoms and signs and analyze them and make sense with the labs and what's going on. And this is part of the art of medicine.
Yeah, and I think what I've run into is like my clients will pay cash to get these tests done, right? And then they'll go to a doctor and say, "Hey, I got this lab done here." The doctors don't know how to interpret it.
I see that a lot. I've seen that before. People bring me in their labs and they're like, oh, they told me nothing was wrong. And I was like, yeah. And because there is an art to interpreting them correctly.
Yeah,
And
even mainstream labs, every doctor will say
yes.
something different. And doctors will see something that another one missed, all the time. And they're given a
Yeah.
pass because they're MDs, but then you go the integrative route and people are much more harsh, but are also the labs on an integrative side are much more complex and in depth. Not everybody is specially trained, and not everybody has the time to be able to call the lab, talk to the doctors, read all the, do all the things that you have to do to learn how to interpret the labs appropriately and effectively.
Right. And this is medically complicated. It's not something where you can just like have a 7-minute visit and prescribe a med and be done. I mean, you really have to sit down and have a complicated conversation.
Yeah.
And especially if you're looking at doing a full course of antibiotics against Lyme, which is often 3 to 4 antibiotics for 3 months.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's heavy, but it's funny because I have a I have friends in the conventional medicine field who are very skeptical about, going on antibiotic courses like that for Lyme. But if you have like acne, there's no problem with taking two or three antibiotics for years, right?
Right.
So
Or
it's
of course you have back-to-back strep, then we'll just give you antibiotics. I've had people who've
Oh.
literally burned their intestines and completely wiped out their entire microbiome and can't eat. They can only eat a bland diet because they took like six rounds of antibiotics because strep wouldn't go away. And it just completely destroyed their health. And the doctors are like, oh, well, at least you don't have strep anymore.
Right.
You know?
And there's a place for antibiotics. I mean, they definitely should not be in our food system.
Right.
That's for sure. And, if you have a viral infection, they're probably not going to help you. However, I have patients who have chronic Lyme and refuse to take antibiotics. And sometimes we'll try to treat with things like methylene blue or herbs, but often we're not successful until we put antibiotics in. So I think there is a place for that. And people get too extreme one way. And then I have other patients where all they do is antibiotics without the true integrative approach, and they fail treatment. And they do really heavy courses of antibiotics that it's like crazy though. So I think that, and there's studies that show that when you combine herbal protocols with antibiotics, it helps the antibiotics work better. But the medication and herb regimens get complicated, and you have to have the willpower and discipline to actually follow it. And this is, and I mean, it can be a full-time job when you were really quite sick.
I've seen that a lot, even with SIBO and things like that, where especially if people are like hardcore against antibiotics and they only want herbal, but then because of how it works, you have to constantly rotate and all of these things. And it's like if you don't do it correctly, you're not going to see improvement. Like that's just how it is.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like if you're well, you can cheat like once a week, with like French fries or gluten. I'm very sick. I haven't cheated for years with gluten, and I don't care because I feel well. But like having people understand this is complicated. And you don't necessarily have to hit 100% mark, but you got to hit in the 90% mark with compliance towards your regimen when you're quite ill. I have a patient right now. It's very sad. She's got cancer, and she's not able to maintain a disciplined regimen, and she doesn't want to do conventional treatment, and it's a complicated. Yeah, it's very complicated.
I think I love that you are a fan of an integrative approach because I think people in the holistic community get really, really hardcore about being anti-pharma and anti-mainstream and anti-everything. And it's like everything has a place. And sometimes an integrative approach does work quite well. When I actually got shingles when I was 32 and did an integrative approach, I tried to do it the natural way for about 24 hours after I got diagnosed. And the next day I was like, I need the drugs. I'm like, give me the antivirals, give me the pain, the narcotic pain meds. Like, I can't function, but I still did all of the other things. And 9 days later, I was fine. I was pain-free. The blisters were scabbed over and almost gone. But the biggest thing was being pain-free.
Oh, and thank God you did, because people who only do one or the other, they end up with postherpetic neuralgia for the rest of their life.
And I felt so lucky that I was able to do an integrative approach. And, and I see people like, oh, I just don't want to. And I'm just like, no, you really do. Do all of that and this, and I think that people just get so.
One of the problems I think though is that I kind of see myself, because I've been both to Chinese medical school and allopathic medical school and Lyme school and mold school. I'm cross-trained in multiple modalities. I've also studied like shamanism. I'm a certified yoga teacher. I've studied like the biochemistry of essential oils. I mean, I love all this stuff. I'm a master herbalist. But a lot of times you go to this integrative health center, and there's a doctor there, and then there's an acupuncturist down the hall, and they have no idea what each other is doing. And it's not integrative. It's really not. They call it holistic, but like the different practitioners have no idea what each other's
It's not
doing.
collective care.
Yeah, and it does require excess education, and a lot of physicians are burned out and not interested. But I don't know, there's a lot of doctors also leaving by the masses because the whole system is breaking down, and look at how much functional medicine is blowing it out of the water right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I mean, it is thousands and thousands of dollars of training that these doctors go through, and there's a risk of like, oh, is my practice going to work? So I see it from the perspective of the physician as well.
Yeah, I have a family member who's a doctor, and he got out of private practice because his malpractice insurance was $1 million a year. And that didn't include his rent, that didn't include his office, the office, the salary for everybody in the office. He wasn't taking home a paycheck for years. And that student loans were in there, and finally he just went to a hospital because they paid off his student loans and they give him a salary and he has set hours and they pay his malpractice. And being a doctor is not easy. So those who stick to it, and those, especially those in the functional world, like functional is taking off because people are sick and then they get better. And these people have the tenacity or maybe ability to continuously train. Like you have.
And it's fun and exciting. And honestly, anything that I think can possibly help somebody should be taught to as many people as want to learn it. I mean, there's no shortage of pain in the world. You know, I mean,
Yeah.
and it's funny when you have these, and this was a problem that was really prevalent when I was in Chinese medical school. You know, there was this attitude of like, oh, this is an ancient Chinese secret and I'm not going to teach you because you're not worthy or you're not Chinese. And but you see this also in the Lyme world, the mold world, as people, you know, don't want to share their knowledge. And it's like any practitioner that I know who's any good is busy. There's no shortage of pain in the world, and I'm happy to share stuff with others. We actually, even my husband and I have a, like, we do little Zoom webinars and professional education. Where we have videos for like 25, $30 that you can buy online about various things. So we do webinars and stuff that's on our newsletter
That's great.
if anybody's interested. Yeah. But we have a lot of people who are like acupuncturists or sound healers who sign up for our classes because they just want to know about things like SIBO or things like Lyme or heavy metal toxicity.
We all in the holistic community run into it. And the more that we know, the more we learn we don't know, for one. So we're much more cautious in the advice that we give, right? But also, as I would say, partners in the healing world, we may not be the doctors and do the treatment plans, but if we can reinforce the why, explain to them again. Because when I feel like what happens is when people are in their appointments, they're just like they're feeling almost, for one, they're feeling validated and blindsided, and their brains are just spinning, so they don't hear everything that you're communicating to them. And then let's say they come to me, and I'm able to reinforce. They're like, I don't understand this treatment plan. I don't know why I have to do this. This seems excessive. And I'm like, well, here's why, because I've learned, right? And I can reinforce. And then if they go to another modality, and then they're like, well, this is why, and they're hearing it from multiple people, it eventually kind of sinks in. And so I find that I just love learning in general, but I found that the better I can reinforce the treatment plan, the more, for one, they're more positive about the treatment plan, which I think is really important. They're more likely to comply, and they're more willing to try the hard things and make the changes that they need to make. So it's like I always love when I can come alongside a practitioner that especially I work with often, and I know why, because I talk to them about it all the time, that I'm able to reinforce. And then when they go back to their appointment, they get more,
Yeah, no, and I think it's important to understand why you're doing something. You're much more likely to do it if you understand why, rather than like, here, take this pill. It's very helpful if you understand mechanisms. And this is part of why I started talking out about parasitic behavior as well, because I do see that psychological, biological mechanism going on a lot with chronic illness. And I've seen it even within myself, and I really had to stop and self-reflect and look at what was going on. I see it a lot with mold toxicity. People will feel so bad with mold die-off that they'll actually like sabotage their own treatment, because I think part of it is, you know, they feel bad with the die-off and they want the mold almost kind of takes over.
Yeah, I also found that people again like to punch things in the face, is what I call it, and they're not willing to do the slow and steady. It's like if your Hodiaf is that bad, you need to tell your doctor so you can take a lower dose and maybe, maybe you need a different binder or maybe there's something else, like
Right.
the books that I've read on, on mold and things like that, is mold especially, is the ones that I find my clients are the most successful in treatment protocols are those that are like, well, if you can't take a whole tablet, take a quarter,
Right.
and then let's try half. Oh, you don't feel good. Let's go back to a quarter. 3 weeks later, let's try half again. Okay, that doesn't feel so bad. So we're gonna do half for a while, and then we're gonna try three quarters. Oh, too have you know too soon, and then eventually we work up to the full dose, right?
Right.
And you can do that.
Especially with binders.
Yes,
Yes,
you,
especially with
and it's
binders.
like, I don't think people realize they can do that, but also it's like, the on. I think the one of the things I love about functional or integrative medicine is there is expected to be constant contact. Like, hey, this die-off is really hard. What can I do? And I think people are so used to just the 15 minutes and out the door and come back in 3 months that they don't even realize that that's an option.
Yeah, it's interesting. My grandmother, she had the same doctor for like 45 years. And like that doctor also, it was a family med doc and saw like my mom as a kid and this and that. And then, when he retired, that was like great. And then by the time my grandmother lived to be 98, by the time she was old, like every 2 years she had a new doctor because her primary care doctor would switch. And I think those kind of those relationships that were long established kind of got lost for a while there, and they're being rejuvenated with functional medicine type of practices
Yeah.
where you actually have this long relationship with someone. I mean, I have a lot of acupuncture clients and that have been my clients since 2009, 2010, and I've known them for years at this point.
Yeah.
It's such an honor to be, really involved in people's life and health for years. And I think you're right. It is a different type of relationship for sure. And the other thing that I think you mentioned, but I really emphasize is when I diagnose somebody with mold toxicity, I tell them this is a minimum of 2 years of treatment, minimum. And I'm 48 years old right now, and it took me a long time to actually like develop autoimmune disease, accumulate heavy metals, accumulate mold toxicity, years of inflammatory, like standard American diet. It takes a long time to undo that stuff. And people, I think, do expect that silver magic bullet, and it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I'm so glad you talked about the timeline because I always tell people, I'm like, I'm always like, it's a minimum of 18 months, upwards of 36. Like,
Oh, I've been in mold toxin treatment for 5 years,
yeah.
and the toxins are still pouring out.
Yeah. And it's like, you're not always going to feel this bad, but healing is a long game.
I'm symptom-free at this point, but I'm still in
Yeah.
treatment. So, I find it's a minimum of 2 years. Now, granted, I'm in Florida, it's a hot, humid place, and there's a certain residual level of mold and almost everywhere, especially we're in Miami Beach, and we have all these pretty little Art Deco buildings that have not been properly maintained. I mean, they're gorgeous, but yeah, musty.
Yeah. but I think that it's a very, people need to know what they're walking into. And it does, I feel like it's almost like I see when I tell people this, I just see it's like a balloon deflating, right? Like they just like the everything in them deflates and they're just like, I'm just so tired of feeling bad. And it's like, you're not going to feel bad the whole time.
Right.
But it's like you didn't get sick overnight. You've been sick for a really long time. Even my teenagers have been sick for sometimes 5 to 7, 8 years, or sometimes,
Definitely. I
since,
see that all the time in young
yeah,
people.
or even my 20s, like, yeah, I've always been this way since as long as I can remember, So I'm like, you've been sick for a really long time, and I've seen 50 or 56 year olds, by the time they're 60, living better lives than they lived in their 20s. Because they were like, okay, this is the long game. 4 years in, they're feeling so much better. They might still be pouring out toxins and things like that and still having to do the treatment plan, but they're able to live their lives much fuller than they've ever been able to. And I think that at first, when people hear that
that long game that they're walking into all day. They're like, I'm just going to keep feeling this bad forever. It's like, no, you're not. But you need to understand that this is what it's going to take at the very minimum.
Right. And I think it's very important that you respect each individual's process. And if you pull toxins out or kill bacteria off faster than the body can handle, you make somebody worse. We do IV chelation at our office to treat heavy metal toxicity. But personally, I cannot handle IV chelation. So I've tried multiple times. Every time I try to do chelation, even orally, I trigger an autoimmune response. And there used to be this very interesting test on the market called the Clifford test, where you could actually look at allergies to metals. An example, a common everyday example is like a lot of people can't wear nickel earrings because they get that little rash right here, or men can't wear a nickel belt because they'll get a rash on their abdomen. Well, that's an allergy to nickel. And imagine if you have nickel inside your body, it just perpetuates this chronic allergic
Yeah, I
reaction.
actually had just had my second in 11 years Nick confirmed nickel allergy where it like we have to do like I was like, let's navigate a low, here's the low nickel diet. Here's, you really need to avoid this cookware. And it's like all the healthy cookware, and they're like, ah.
Right. But nickel's a bad autoimmune trigger. It's a horrible, there's a lot of documentation in scientific literature. All you need to do
Yeah.
is go to PubMed. It's a horrible autoimmune trigger. You pull that nickel out too fast, you make somebody sick to the point where I get a Guillain-Barré reaction and can't walk.
They don't know what to blame, right? And yeah, and that's I think where again being very well educated is so important because again these lesser educated or new to the field that are still learning and trying to help people, their heart's in the right place. But again, they're trying to punch everything in the face and just get things out, don't realize that they're doing more harm than good. And I think as a patient, you
Yeah.
really need to advocate for yourself. And if it's too hard, you have to say, I this is something's wrong. We have to stop. And it's okay. And a good practitioner is going to listen and honor.
Yeah. No, you're very right. And it's important to empower patients to let people know about symptoms or to say, hey, I tried this, I can't tolerate it, and here's why. And let's reevaluate the treatment plan and rethink. A good practitioner is willing to do that. Or if not, like if I don't know what to do, the professional thing is to refer. There's people where I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to refer you to my mentor or my professor or somebody who specializes this. I had a patient recently. I suspect she's got this unique genetic immune deficiency. And I referred her to the university. I was like, you need a specialist in immune system stuff because
Beyond my skill set.
I don't know what
Yeah.
to do.
I think that, that also I think instills trust too. 'Cause then once they get the diagnosis and know what they need to do, they can go back and say, well, do you have any options for me to help me holistically? 'Cause there is no silver bullet. It usually does take a mixture of allopathic and integrative medicine and modalities. 'Cause this may not just be herbs and stuff, but we're talking ozone therapy, we're talking yoga, we're talking nervous system regulation, we're talking EMDR, we're talking, there's a lot of different modalities that can go into healing and obviously and honestly required, I think, for a lot of healing. So I think that when people can move into this integrated approach, like there's a time and a place for allopathic medicine, and I need to respect that, but then also know that there are other things that I can do to help the process along at the same time.
It's just exciting, though, honestly, because there's so many layers to this stuff. It never gets boring, that's for sure. And I really think if you're truly healthy, and there's very few Americans who are, you can do just holistic alternative stuff. But a lot of us, we have the most elevated toxic burdens that have ever been
Yep.
seen,
Yeah.
in several generations. And so I think it's gets deeply disturbing when you think about even just things like my clothing is toxic, my food is toxic, my air is toxic, my water is toxic. And I mean it really requires a
Diligence, and it's exhausting. Yeah. So, I'm pregnant and I work with a couple fertility specialists. Learning about like polyester and underwear. Do you know how hard it is to find underwear without polyester in it? But that polyester literally goes into the uterus and can make it a toxic environment and you can't get pregnant.
No,
And then
I
there's
know.
2,000 chemicals added to our environment every single year. So and that's it's been that way for at least 60, probably 100 years by now. 1911, I think, is like when it really started. So we're over 100 years now. So if you think about just the domino effect of everything, we have 5G now. We have all these things that are kind of racking up against us. And then because we're not allowing children to get sick anymore due to vaccines and things like that, then the immune system's not being trained. So then, these infections that might have been benign are no longer benign anymore. And so then we do have this chronic illness from these stealth infections that we're seeing today in large and large amounts. And I am so excited that we've connected. I want to have you back on the podcast because I would
Oh, it
love
would be
to
my
talk
honor.
mold
Yeah.
with you and then other stealth infections. Epstein-Barr is another one that I think is so sorely misunderstood. And memes on
Oh my
Insta and
God.
memes on
And you know,
Instagram just don't do it justice.
I see EMF sensitivity. I've never seen EMF sensitivity without viral stuff being off the chart.
That's good to know. So there's so much that we can talk about. So
Yeah.
I would love to take people on like a deeper journey. This is like just scratching the surface, but just
Yeah, we could talk for
we
hours.
could. And I'm just like absorbing it all and I'm just so excited. So, we've talked about finding a practitioner that specializes in Lyme, the two American-based companies, the cost of it. And then, treatment is typically layered. You may have more than one stealth infection going on, and it does have to be, they have to be resolved in a certain order, and it takes time.
That's a great summary. That's a really good summary. And what I'll do is so that you can link to the podcast, I'll send you the MSIDS. I'll send you like I made like a one page PDF of like eight signs and symptoms you might
That'd be
have
great.
chronic Lyme. I'll send you that one, and then I'll send you the websites to the two labs. And I'm sure they would be. I know Infecto Labs. The immunologist there is my friend, and he would be open to talking on your
Oh my
podcast
gosh, I
for
would love
sure.
that so much.
Yeah, no, he's very interesting. Smart guy, smart guy. PhD
So
in
fun.
immunology.
So again, thank you so much
Yeah.
for coming on. And when I get back from
Sure.
maternity leave, let's get you and your husband scheduled on different days because you both have just so much different knowledge. But I would love to have you back and to take people further. And then maybe we could even just talk about acupuncture and what it is and how beneficial it is. I haven't had
Sure.
anybody on yet to talk about acupuncture.
Oh, I love talking about acupuncture because we can get into.
And I think that it's just a modality that's so misunderstood, especially in our Western culture. How can people reach out to you? And maybe if they're local, they or want to become a patient or just talk to you, how can they reach out to you and how they find you?
So we have a website and it's super easy. It's www.miamibeachcwc.com. That's Cat Wellness Cat. It's Comprehensive Wellness Center. But all you do is go to our website and we have like a form where you can like there's text us at, and we have a HIPAA compliant texting line. Now, I can see patients via video. I always tell people it's limited what I can do from a distance. So it's very different if you. But I have a patient who lives in Canada, and we do video consults, and she keeps coming back. So obviously, I'm helping her somehow. Now, my patients who do the best are able to come into the office every week, get vitamin IVs, acupuncture, actually receive things like blood ozonation, EBO, whatever treatments that are appropriate. But there's still a lot we could do from a distance, so they can reach out that way. That's the best way to contact me. Is I have an amazing front desk staff. They're just an incredible force. Yeah, they could get you set up with forms and we can schedule video consults.
Wonderful. Thank you again so much, Emily, for coming on and just sharing your knowledge and your passion. I know this podcast is going to be really helpful for a lot of people as a launching point. So I'm just so honored and excited that you came on and spoke with me.
Well, thank you for taking the time and inviting me to be your guest. It's been lovely to chat with you. We could chat for hours.
Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. If you found this episode helpful, would you do me a favor and help others find it by leaving a review, sharing a screenshot on social media, or sharing the link with a friend? By you sharing what you've learned, others are able to find this podcast and join our community. Be sure to check out my website, www.roadtolivingwhole.com, for over 160 delicious recipes, a variety of meal plans, and a blog packed full of even more healthy living tips. If you'd like to learn more about how to work with me as your coach, you can schedule a free consult through www.roadtolivingwhole.com/health-coaching/. Until next time, friend. Bye.